Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today I'm with John. John, how are you doing?
I am well, Thomas. Thanks for having me.
I'm good.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. It's nice to be with you, mate, in the virtual studio, and I'm looking forward to having a good old chat and having some fun.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, sir.
Cool. So for everyone listening that hasn't met you, John, so John Waldman started off back in the day as a web developer and then joined SBS Cybersecurity. Originally, you were doing the information security consultant. You were involved with some auditing. You were then the vice president of professional services, heavily involved with the business development side of the business as vice president of business development. Executive Vice President of Information Security Consulting. You then held the posting of President for over 4 years, Chief People Officer over 3 years. You're also the founding partner, which is a position you've held for almost 20 years. And currently, you are the president of the organization. So welcome to the show. It sounds like it's been a busy couple of decades, my friend.
It has. And as we talk about approaching 20 years, I think the company was chartered 20 years ago, right about now. And it's funny and interesting to even talk about it being 20 years. Sometimes it feels all of 20 years, and sometimes you blink and wonder where 20 years went.
Yeah, good. Look, there's definitely some really good things today that we can unpack in terms of benefiting for the listeners. The pod's all about career progression. You've had a lot of it. I'd like to dive into the business development side as well, because like from a communication standpoint and stuff like that, I know you would have picked up some really key foundational skills that have carried you through. I know just before we hit record, we were talking about your teaching, and I'd like to hear more about learning methodologies and do's or don'ts that you see when you're helping folks come through the industry and stuff like that. But we dive into that, John. I'll start where I always start, which is, I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but who are you, my friend? What do you get up to on a day-to-day basis? And what's professional life or personal life for that matter? What's life like for John in general right now?
You bet. As you mentioned, we founded SBS just 20 years ago. Right now, like, we're getting our kids signed up for school starts here in a couple weeks in South Dakota. 20 years ago, I was getting ready to begin my journey into my master's program of information assurance at Dakota State University here in our little town of Madison, South Dakota. And it's grown into this big, fantastic cybersecurity university that pumps out hundreds of kids each year that go into the world of cyber in all different areas. There's a lot of times when people think of cybersecurity, they think of CrowdStrike as an example, because that's been in the news, or some of these other companies. When cybersecurity is a lot more than just hardware or software that prevents bad stuff from happening. It runs the gamut, and I'm sure we'll probably cover some of that. But yeah, so we were gearing up to start this Masters of Information Assurance journey, and there was a professor that kind of pulled each of us aside and said, hey, there's a change in the regulatory environment for banks, and some banks are reaching out to folks in the community, and they're asking for help because they're starting to get examined for IT stuff. And banks had never been examined for IT stuff. They don't know IT stuff. And it turned out to be more than IT stuff. That's how we got our start, is by just talking with folks and really solving problems, real world problems, for folks that didn't really know how to secure and manage their technology infrastructure. Again, that was 20 years ago. The world has changed a ton from both a technology perspective and a regulatory perspective. But well, that's really how it got us started. We're a very entrepreneurial family here in our household. My wife has her own business. She runs a local floral shop. That's a whole interesting and funny story in and of itself. We never really planned to have two separate businesses that do really well for each other, but here we are. So our days are busy. Our kids are growing. So we're all over the place between activities and businesses and events and spending time with family and participating in the community, all kinds of stuff.
Cool. I bet the floral business is, I've actually always imagined that could be a pretty good business if you get it right.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship is all shapes and sizes, right? And yes, she does amazing work. She is a wonderful human. And those two things, it's very similar to what we do in terms of SBS is a software and service company. When you've got good people that do wonderful services, provide wonderful services for folks, they continue to come back. So that's the moral of the story there. You do a good job, you're a good person, you care about your customers, they'll continue to come back. And so she's done really well with it. We took over, it was a long-standing business. The husband and wife that ran it prior to us, we took over for them after 33 years. She went to school for a handful of different things at a community college in Sioux Falls, horticulture, landscape and design, and of all things sports turf management. She interned with the couple that were retiring. And so we picked up the business from them, changed it around a little bit, and we just invested a little over $1 million to rebuild the whole thing from the ground up. And it's been wonderful. The community support's been fantastic. She's going to double what she did previously from an annual revenue perspective. So it's been really fun.
Cool. Yeah, good. Wicked, John. Well, nice story there, my friend, to get it started off. But yeah, so 20 years ago, professors pulled you to one side and said, hang on a minute, I think these banks might start taking this compliance and security thing a little bit seriously. And this is before security was cool. And it sounds like you've quite a natural or organic way for the business to form, which is nice. And you've going and stuff like that. And I'm imagining there's been some good times, John. I'm imagining there's been some bad times. It'd be nice to talk about both. I know there's a lot of people out there that are struggling at the minute. There's pockets of the market that are definitely still busy, but there's also areas where people are having a tough time. Over the years, when you have pulled through and found it tough, have you got any like resilience tips or any go-to things that you do to and get the progression and the success that you've had over the years?
Absolutely. And it's what the entrepreneurship journey is all about, isn't it? Is about resilience. So yeah, when we started, it was four college kids and a professor that really didn't have a ton of idea what we were doing at the time. So we built it, like you said, organically. Got a couple customers. We did a good job. We didn't have office space for the first year or two that we really were doing this thing while we were going to school. Once we graduated, we found some office space so we didn't have to meet in each other's basements and at random meeting rooms on campus, those types of things. So that those first couple of years were certainly super lean. We didn't pay ourselves much those first years. I remember, and 20 years ago, making $40,000 a year straight out of college was a pretty good deal, but it wasn't necessarily tremendous money by any means. But again, you had to start with what you could afford. And so then we grew and we added folks, and there were certainly ups and downs. But from the beginning, it was the question that I asked myself was, is this a viable business model? Yes. This is something that is going to be sustainable because our customer base, at least our initial target customer base, was they had to do this stuff, right? So if we do a good job and we provide great service and partner with folks instead of coming in and kicking their butts, can you imagine a 22-year-old kid with long hair, long hippie hair, going into talking to bank presidents and telling them what they need to do about technology stuff? Because that was me. And so you had to both look the part, you had to speak the part, you had to learn the language, because it's not like we grew up in banking families or something like that. But again, it was the viable business model. We really cared about our customers. We cared about the quality of our services, the quality of our deliverables, and we cared about the value that we gave people. And as you grow, you hit this glass ceiling of how much stuff can four college kids do. So then you go out and you find somebody that you believe can help. And we didn't know a whole lot about hiring at the time. So we had some home runs. One of the first guys that we hired is still with the company today. He's our director of sales, as an example, and he's fantastic. Some folks last a little bit of time. So there's definitely some of those question marks right away. And then you figure out that process and you iterate and go forward and improve. But yeah, there have been times when the tech crisis, the bubble burst at the end of the 2000s. We're like, oh, shoot, what are we going to do here? But we didn't just make it through. Like, we really succeeded during that time frame. Again, because most of our clients have to do this stuff. And if you do a good job, they'll continue to come back. But yeah, what we talk about, the other thing that we talk about is you have to innovate or die in our space. You can't do the same thing that we did 20 years ago and make it. So you always have to be thinking about, how do I improve my products or services? What is the market looking for? Because the market today is a customer-based market, right? You have to go where your customers are and do the things that your customers want. So how do you iterate and improve your products and services over time? Customers don't necessarily expect change to happen tomorrow, but in the banking space, if you don't have the technology that your customers want, they're going to go somewhere else. That, you can say that about any business today. And then there's the people side of the world, really knowing and understanding who you are as a business, what your culture looks like, who makes good hires, who fits in the best, building your hiring and your termination process around your culture. And there was a book that I read, and I can't remember the gentleman that wrote it. I can't even remember the name of the book off the top of my head. I have it on my bookshelf. But he talked about two beers and a baby, I think is what it was, right? And from a hiring perspective, would you want to sit down, or would you sit down and have two beers with this person? Not just one beer, because you can have a beer for anybody with anybody. You want to have a second beer with this person. And, oh, it was two beers and a dog, I think is what it was, not a baby.
Okay. But okay.
The same works. And would you let this person watch your baby or watch your dog for a day? Like, if that's the bar, then it's probably somebody that you could hire. If not, then you're probably thinking about the wrong type of person.
Yeah, cool. John, there's a few things to unpack there. First of all, though, mate, you're going to have to send me a picture of you 22 years old with hippie hair. I would love to see that, mate.
This was, you know, kind of almost before social media, which I'm thankful for, that my whole college career isn't on the internet for everyone to see. But yeah, sure. Not too many of those pictures, but there's maybe one or two floating around.
I'm sure we could dig one out somewhere. But look, there's some really good points there you made. You talked giving value to the other person first, and I think that's massive. That personally might sound a bit harsh, but I think a lot of people they go into situations too much thinking about what they can get it out of it first, and not about giving value first and realizing that good things come back later on. I think that's a massive point. I love the innovate or die thing. I can relate that to what's going on in the jobs market now. When I look across the general market, I think for the past 7, 8, 9 years, it's been very candidate led. For the first time ever, it's been pretty client led. And basically those on that jobs market that don't innovate will, as harsh as it sounds, die. And I think that innovate or die thing's really good. I say, what's the market looking for? You've got to iterate. You've got to move forward. I can see why sustained your success over a long period of time, because things do change. Nothing stays the same. And I think there's some really prevalent points there. How do you notice when, is there any markers when things do need to change? Is it just keeping your ear to the ground, talking to your customers? How do you keep your finger on the pulse in relation to that, my friend?
That's primarily really two things, right? What does the customer demand? So as of right now, I kind of lead the project aspect. I'm not an operator as I used to be, but I do a lot of speaking and talking to clients and listening to what the market is doing. So there's a massive trend in the banking space, which is one of the slower markets to adopt cloud computing as a networking architecture, right? So we're not talking about using software as a service. Everybody does that because nobody goes to Best Buy or your big box retailer and buy a box of software anymore. That's been dead for 12 years, maybe closer to 20. But from a network architecture perspective, everyone's transitioning to the cloud, and there's pros and cons to everything. But the more organizations that start living in the cloud from a networking architecture perspective, you have to change your services. You can't conduct a penetration test on a cloud architecture like you would on a traditional network architecture. We're evolving our network security team to be able to do different types of services. And some of these services have been around and our customers just haven't been super interested in them. But as we look at our target market as an example and say, hey, we want to work with larger businesses. We still want to work with our smaller organizations. We're not kicking anybody out of the door, but how do we help larger organizations? Because we grew up in small community banking, but how do we work with larger organizations? They need different things. They don't necessarily need a consultant to help them understand how to build and manage an information security program, which is our bread and butter, but because they've got 12 people on their team, whereas a smaller community bank might have one, maybe two, and there's some turnover there. But how do we innovate and grow our services? So part of it is, who do you want to serve and what do they need? And part of it is, hey, we've been doing this thing and we've been doing audits and we've been doing consulting and we've been doing network security assessments for 20 years. We can't do them the same as we did 20 years ago because the requirements change, the customers change, their needs change, the regulatory environment changes, the technology changes. As an example, I remember working with one of my first customers and they were really excited 20 years ago almost that everybody finally got their own individual desktop PC. And it's just funny how everything works in a cyclical perspective, because that was the time that every organization 20 years ago, it's not like we're talking 50, 60 years ago, 20 years ago in the early 2000s was the time that businesses could finally afford to buy everyone a personal workstation instead of using terminal services, meaning they had a server and you had this cheap dummy terminal, right? And now it's funny, we're going back to virtual environments and dummy terminals. It's just funny how these things work in a cyclical fashion. But back to my main point, I've derailed a little bit, but you have to listen to what your customers' needs are and what the market is, but you also have to reflect and look at your own services and say, how long have we been doing this? Is it still providing the same value today as it was when we started doing it or when we last iterated? So we have annual sit downs with all of our teams at our annual company retreats. And you say, all right, what do we need to do different? How can we improve in today's world? How can AI help us? How can it be more efficient? How can it help us get something done faster and save us time? How can it help the customer? Not to say that we're implementing AI and it not looking at it, because you have to still be on top of it, but how can you get a 10% efficiency gain out of a service, which over a year when you're performing 500 services adds up to a really big gain over the long term? So just as an example.
Yeah, no, it's cool, John. It's, I think as well, like, to really pull out some key points of what you said there, it's change is happening, I think, faster and faster. I read a stat somewhere, and I can't exactly quote it, but it was saying like a child growing up now is going to experience change so much faster than what we did because of AI and automation and all these things. So I think just getting used to change, you mentioned there about reviewing yourself, sitting down on your annual retreat, how can we improve? Essentially, you're talking about a heightened level of self-awareness and making sure that you're really keeping up with things. And it's a common theme I see across every podcast guest that's doing really well, is that it is that constant, I think self-awareness is the best way to describe it, really. And really checking yourself. I can relate it to business. I can relate it to the jobs market. I can relate it to anything. But John, if we move on to hiring and stuff like that, obviously, I know you're at around about 90 heads now, and kind of business is busy. When you are looking to hire people, is there any do's and don'ts? Is there anything you like? Do you like it if people step outside application channels and hit you up directly? Is that something, is there anything else you would advise people to stand out in a crowded market? Any advice for the listeners there, my friend?
A little different for everybody. I would say some of it depends on personality, but yes, I love when customers express passion, which is one of our core values here at SBS. So I'm connected to a lot of folks, especially in this banking space, with the speaking engagements that we've done over the years and the education that we continue to do. So we love connecting with a lot of folks and spreading our gospel, if you will, a little bit. So we always encourage folks to reach out to us. And in turn, we get a lot of folks that apply for our roles and would tend to reach out to me, even though I'm not involved in the hiring process really whatsoever for any of our teams, unless you're an executive level person at SBS these days. But I stay involved from a process perspective when it was my chief people officer role at the time, because our people are our most important asset here at SBS. We can talk more about that and how we view that here in a little bit. But from a do's and don'ts perspective, if you can demonstrate passion, like how you're passionate for what it is that you do during an interview, that to me stands out. I could tell you, as an example, we hired a gentleman in Arizona that was working as a genius in an Apple store. Didn't have a background in cybersecurity. He taught himself. He wanted to do something other than work in retail. And he taught himself over the course of a year and a half or something like that, how to hack. And he made it onto the top five leaderboard of Hacker One, the thing that caught our attention off the top of the chain, because there's this guy that doesn't have a background, didn't go to school for technology or cybersecurity. He's a classically trained musician, an opera singer, working in an Apple store. He's not the guy that you would normally hire, but he made it into our screen process and talked about his exploits on HackerOne. And we're like, hey, we got to talk to this guy. And we ended up hiring him, right? We hired a number of years ago a guy that was the head of IT for a small hardware store and had 2-3 locations and was self-taught from that perspective. So it's not always about what's on your resume, but he was really passionate about the efforts that he put in to secure this retail store. So there's all of these different stories. I had two individuals that reached out to me in the last week that were applying for different positions on LinkedIn. And I'm always happy to talk. And I tell folks, hey, we empower our teams to decide what it is that they want to hire and handle and manage that hiring process. We actually have our own internal recruiter to build relationships. So we have a bullpen of folks that when we're looking, we've got a relationship with people and we can reach out and try to move a little quicker. Sometimes they reach out to me and say, hey, I haven't heard back from anybody. And there was a professor at a community college in Iowa that reached out and said, I've been following you for a while and I didn't get accepted and that's okay. I wanted to reach out to you and let you know that it looks like such a wonderful opportunity. I just didn't want the chance to talk to somebody about this pass. I'm like, all right, we'll talk to you. I'll reach out to our recruiter. We'll get you on the horn. And I'm not promising anything because of what I just told you about. We let our teams drive the process. So we look for certain things. If you don't fit, that's okay. But we'd love to have at least have a conversation, whether it's you've got a server rack in your basement and you're real passionate about network security and understanding how devices talk to one another across a network, a virtual environment, how you can hack them, how you can compromise them, how you can live in the land, to what are your passion projects, demonstrating your passion and your desire to learn and improve and building relationships are probably the two, maybe three best keys to really standing out in a crowded field from my perspective. That don't work for everybody. Some people just, depending on your personality, like I'm a relationship guy, so it works for me. It might not work for everybody, but.
Yeah, cool. It's good. It's nice to hear what someone who's running the business wants, John. You hear all these things, different things online, but it's nice to actually hear what you want. So essentially, because this is like some people, this is their dream, like to go from retail to breaking into security. Like I get hit up on DMs all the time to be able to get back to everyone. To be perfectly honest, I don't have time to get back to everyone these days. So I always like to include in each episode, like how can people break in? What's the best thing to do? But essentially, like we're talking about like high levels of aptitude and ability to use your initiative. You use the word passion, but it's essentially like being able to do stuff off your own back, give real life quantifiable examples. You use the HackerOne, getting in the top five scenario. So it's really on top of relationship building, it's really just showing that you can actually get up, do things yourself, make it happen, even without any help. You just go out there and do it and pick stuff up in an ever-changing environment. That's the kind of crux of it, yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, especially in a world where more and more jobs are remote, right? And that's a whole different ballgame in and of itself. But yeah, you've got to be able to demonstrate that you're really interested. You've got a penchant for learning. Because as we talked about, the world has changed tremendously over the last 20 years. It's going to continue to change and evolve. If you're in development, how are you leveraging AI? Not using AI to write code for you, but leveraging AI tools to build better code faster, as an example. But it doesn't necessarily matter where you came from. 20 years ago, there weren't degrees in cybersecurity. Some of the best people I've ever worked with had a background in psychology, in music, in these creative type things. So it doesn't, your background, your history doesn't matter as much as how you can show your passion and your penchant for learning, your aptitude for continuous learning. We always talk about that here at SBS. Our chief strategy officer, who was our CEO for a period of time and who was our business coach before that, always said there's really one way to stand out at SBS in a bad way, and that's to not work hard, because you'll stand out like a sore thumb because everybody's working really hard because they love what they do. They love our customers. They help each other. We just have this wonderful culture. And if you're standing out in a bad way, that means that you're not participating. You're not helping people. You're not working hard, and you can smell it out pretty quick.
Yeah, I love that, mate. I really like the thing as well, the point you make about in a remote environment, because we're the same here. And as much as I'm hiring all day for other companies, we're looking at doing some of our own hiring. And you really start being able to think on your feet and move forward and be switched on and smart and work hard and emotionally intelligent. Right. You think when you're remote and there's, you know, we've got different time zones involved over here, it's unless the person is everything we've just described, it's going to be hard work, isn't it? For both parties.
And sometimes you don't realize that until 3 to 6 months in either. And that's okay. You got to give yourself grace. And whether you're somebody that's looking for a job or whether you're a hiring person, you're not going to bat 1,000. So you just learn a lesson each time. Never let a opportunity for a lesson to be learned pass you by.
You mentioned the chap that got into the top five on HackerOne. You said he was a musician as well, and I think there's definitely a correlation there, because a lot of my clients that have come from like a hacking background that have set up their own companies, or even some of the hackers or red teamers that I'm friends with, so many are in rock bands, musicians. There's definitely something going on in the brain here that links it all in.
It's creativity and again that passion for learning, because it's not even folks that are in bands are always practicing, always looking to improve, right? Yeah. We've got so many people here in that same boat. One of my good friends, he isn't working with us anymore, but is in this death metal band. But we have all kinds of folks. We joke about when we get together at an annual retreat, we should have a SBS band of folks. I'm not sure, is that left brain creativity, I think?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I know what you mean.
Yeah, so much of that translates into very similar stuff on the cybersecurity side of the world.
Cool. John, we've talked about learning and picking new things up and having a passion for learning a lot. Security moves arguably faster than any other industry. It moves at a lightning pace. I know you do teaching outside of work to give back to the community and things like this. Is there anything with learners that any optimal ways of learning or things that you see students and learners do well, things that people don't do so well that could help the listeners get better in terms of optimizing their own career progression and their own learnings? Any tips or hints there?
Primarily hands-on stuff, right? Because we have, as an example, we have certification programs and we designed them specifically for bankers in mind, and they've been very popular because they are banking specific. We've had over 3,000 folks take our certifications we've been doing it probably 10 years. So we're not setting the world on fire, but we're helping a lot of folks really understand how to build and manage information security programs and cybersecurity programs in the banking space. And there's less than 5,000 banks left. So there's a really good about where that's at. But we always include real world exercises, right? We also do webinars through what we call our SBS Institute. That's our learning and educational wing. And those have been extremely popular because we do this same style. So it's really about, from a teaching perspective, it's about engaging your audience. From a learning perspective, it's about not just listening to folks, because we've all been there. We've all listened to a webinar that's gone on for 60 minutes or 90 minutes or whatever the case is, and we're answering our email or we're messaging our coworkers or we're working on a presentation or a project on the side, and we're not engaged. But in order to do the homework or a real world exercise in a certification program or, you know, the graduate school of banking that we were talking about before this a little bit. So we build these exercises to really engage folks and show them. It's not going to teach, you know, over the course of a 30-minute exercise how to be a cybersecurity professional. You're going to have to spend more time hands-on learning, but that's really where it is. It's that hands-on, real-world application type stuff. So if you find courses that have real-world applications, whether it's, you know, how to do penetration testing or how to run a vulnerability scan or how to write a policy for an information security program the right way, those are the things that I would encourage you to seek out.
Yeah, definitely. And you make a really good point, mate, about actually engaging. I know if you listen to this podcast, there'll be people listening, taking notes and doing this and doing that. And that is, so you use the word engaged, and that is the way to be. I think sometimes, especially in this day and age, I think it's so easy to sit on a webinar, just chilling out, and you think some information will be going in. But if you're going to do it, I've always thought, if you're going to do it properly, but it's like that. So I think that's a really good point. Don't kid yourself for people listening. Just really, really, maybe listen less, but the bit you listen to, really take it in. And yeah, I think that's good. Also, the learning side, John, I think anyone listening that's at the more senior end of the market, I don't know how you found the learning, but I know that when you're teaching other people, it's actually helping you as well, because it's reinforcing 100%. Your knowledge and getting you to look at things in different ways. Have you found that? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I learn best, is by engaging material, right? It's not by listening to somebody talk about this for 60 minutes and then I get distracted, because I'm an easily distracted, shiny object, oh, look, a squirrel type guy. So that's how I learn a lot of this stuff as well, whether it's cloud penetration testing. I'm not a network security engineer. I'm not a hacker. I'm more of the consulting upfront governance type guy, or at least I was in my career as an operator. But I know enough to be dangerous. I know enough to teach it to other people, whether it's learning more about banking as a service and fintechs and sitting down with customers and talking about what they're looking for, what they need as we look to build services for folks, or digging into NIST CSF 2.0 and integrating that into our certification programs, or doing a webinar, all of those things. Absolutely. And I was going to say that too. If you really want to know material, then teach it to somebody. That's how you, it doesn't make you an expert on doing it by any stretch of the imagination, but it helps your grasp of a subject pretty significantly. Doesn't mean you'll always be right. I still get corrected by folks at conferences that are much more technical than me. And that's perfectly fine, because then again, I have something to take away and research, and I won't make that mistake twice. But
it's definitely a good thing. And I think the teaching thing, it's like the rule of the universe, because you're helping other people, the universe helps you, and it all comes back around. It's good. So we've talked a lot about how to learn, how to upskill, how to get better, do's and don'ts there. We've talked about how to get hired. I know to do what you've done in the consulting world and the business development world, I know communication skills will have had to have been very much on point. And obviously, I'm talking to you now, I can tell they still are. I always say, John, like, anyone that's got mega technical skills, you combine them with some like dynamite communication skills. You use the word dangerous, but I'll use it again. It's like you become very dangerous in a good way, and within the security world, in terms of your success levels, career progression. Any tips, hints, advice in terms of enhancing and refining communication skills for people out there listening?
We call them unicorns in our world, like business, this billion-dollar idea, and you go get VC money or whatever the case is, and you become this unicorn with this tremendous market cap. But if whatever your abilities are from a day-to-day operator perspective, you're 100% right. If you combine that with tremendous speaking and communication skills, then you will be in extreme demand. If you're a network security engineer, if you're a software developer, if you're a consultant, obviously you need to have good communication skills if you're on the consulting side of the world, an IT auditor, an accountant, whatever your role is. And we have all of those here at SBS amongst other folks. So in terms of communication, part of it is much like we've been talking about teaching. We leverage our day-to-day operators on the audit side of the world, on the network security engineer side of the world. We leverage primarily our consultants because they're less specialized and more broad in terms of their cybersecurity knowledge. But being able to speak and present even amongst your team, right? When we send folks to conferences or they take online courses, one of our requirements for paying for training and education for our team, which we love to do, is to then turn around and present it to your team. It could be a 5 or 10 minute presentation, but not only does it deepen the person's knowledge that received the training, but they're also sharing that training. We pull our operators into our webinars and they present and share their knowledge from that perspective. But part of it is, I still remember when we were building our first full-time team of penetration testers, you got folks that just want to go out and hack the planet. I hate to tell anybody that wants to be a hacker, penetration tester, whatever the case is, if you don't have writing skills or communication skills, then you're not going to last very long in that environment. Because 75% of your job is going to be writing reports and communicating that upstream, whether it's to your boss, whether that's to a client, whatever the case is. So if you can't do that or you hate doing that, then you might be in the wrong field. Maybe AI can help you with the reporting side of the world today and make your life easier. I shouldn't say maybe, it probably can. But again, back when I was going to school, we had a class called Documentation and Presentation. And on the first day of class, the professor, his name was Dr. John Laughlin, never forget him, lays out a bunch of styrofoam balls and some straws and some other things. And he says, make a chicken. So you get into a group of three people and you build this chicken out of these materials that you have. And then he says, all right, looks great. Now take it apart and write a user guide on how to build the chicken. So you do. And then you did this over probably a couple days of class, maybe as a week project. And then after you write your user guide, he says, switch, right? So your team goes and sits down and with another team's instructions on how to build this chicken. And he said, and the requirement is you have to follow the instructions to the letter. No improvising. You just do what it says. And so you build this chicken and it don't work, right? So you got to iterate, you know, 3 or 4 times, and then you put yourself in the user mindset about how to write a user guide. There's a wonderful video somewhere out on YouTube or Instagram about this dad having his children write him a user guide on how to create a peanut butter sandwich. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's really hilarious. So put yourself in the seat of the reader, right? What is it that you would find important and how would you want that to be communicated? And that doesn't always work out super well for operators that are really technical. So you might need to get feedback from someone else that's less technical about, hey, is what I'm putting in this report valuable? How can I best communicate this to somebody that is less technical than me? Great things to think about.
Yeah, definitely. I've said that before. Just try and explain SQLI or cross-site scripting to your mate that's never got no interest in security whatsoever and, I don't know, does whatever. I think if he, or explain it to your spouse that's outside of security, or your mom, your dad, your uncle, and if they get it, then you're probably doing okay. But yeah, to your point about pen testers and hackers, I always say, unless you're going to do bug bounty on a freelance basis and smash it, yeah, it might be an idea to get good at these communication things, because they're going to carry you a long way. But yeah, no, some good stuff there, John. And I think it's important. I think we're starting to talk about it more, but we I don't know. It's an industry. I don't know if people just shy away from it because it is a weak area for some people, but you should probably know if you haven't practiced it much, you probably never, it's like the first time you do it. That pen test, you're probably not very good at it. The first time you really try and push your communication skills forward, it's probably going to feel uncomfortable. It's like anything in life, isn't it?
Absolutely. Communication is the key that unlocks so much in life, whether it's with your spouse, and my wife knows more about cybersecurity than you would ever expect a florist to know. She could never do any of the things because she's a little technologically challenged in some areas. God bless her soul. But communication, whether it's communicating effectively with your spouse or your partner or your coworkers or your boss or your manager or a recruiter, since we're talking about recruiting, all of those things just unlock a whole different level in life.
Yeah, they do. They do. And I think for people thinking of it, like if people out there good technically, I would almost look at it as those technical skills that you've got, give them the opportunity they deserve. Because if your communication's not good, they're not going to get a chance to be fully utilized and fully exposed in a positive way. So I think it's almost see it as giving those technical skills the opportunity and the success that they deserve. John, I know we touched upon a book, and I always like to ask people, best book, podcasts, content you've consumed, just is there anything out there, could be cybersecurity related, could be communication, could be self-development, just anything that you've consumed content wise in any way, shape or form that's really elevated your success that could also do the same for the listeners?
Absolutely. I am a huge student of learning, and I've got a list of 1,000 books probably that I could share with you. And foremost, I would be remiss not to harken back to that book that I mentioned earlier, which was, the book is called Works Well With Others by Ross McCammon. And it's 2 beers and a puppy. So I was not a baby, but a puppy.
You weren't far off, mate. We'll give you that.
I used to be a real physical book type guy, and I still purchase physical copies of books that I really love. And you probably see my bookshelf back over here, which is getting filled with more and more junk or toys or memorabilia. But I'll give you the top folks that I love to follow, and it runs the gamut. I mentioned, I think, earlier that we do some coaching with Tony Robbins. I'm a big Tony Robbins fan. Not fanboy type thing, but his messages about self-development are so wonderful. And he's got really good programs. So I would really check him out. You can watch all of this stuff on YouTube, some key messages from some of these folks. But Tony Robbins, I've been a big follower of his for a long time. That's really helped me personally in my personal life. Gary Vaynerchuk is my spirit animal. I love Gary's messages. Watching him build businesses, doing it. I mean, he talks about empathy and kindness and clouds and dirt and blessings and gratitude. So many wonderful messages from Gary. I also am a big fan of Simon Sinek. So a lot of what I listen to today is about leadership and strategy and growth and top end of the business type stuff. So it might not be the stuff that folks are looking for here today, but listening to Simon Sinek's or watching Simon Sinek's, I don't even remember how long ago it was, 12 years ago, maybe 14, his TED Talk on Start With Why was life-changing. It changed my whole outlook on business. So if your listeners have never checked out Simon Sinek's original TED Talk that talks about Start With Why, game changer. I've read, I think, all of his books. He's a great follow on LinkedIn, does a ton of great content. We're huge fans of John Maxwell. There's also the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. We're actually doing a book study with our managers. No, our whole company on that one right now. So many different areas. So there's a lot of really tried and true great business books, self-development books, but those are some of my favorites.
Yeah, thanks, John. And it's, yeah, you mentioned there, because it's true, I bet some people listening won't, some of these, Tony Robbins, Power, isn't it? That is a good book. That's absolutely a really good book.
Time of Your Life is another really great one. Yeah. My mom's a certified life coach, but more so, it's a really interesting story. She's a pharmacist by trade, and kind of her side passion is to help people get off of prescriptions. So she's got this medical lifestyle coach to understand how you can take less pills by investing in yourself. But she's reading one of his latest books. I don't even remember the name of it. I gave it to her off the top of my head, but it's been so tremendous in helping her with her clients.
Yeah, thanks, John. And also, you use the word like mindset there and investing in yourself. And there's such good things to bear in mind. Like, how can we not invest in ourselves? Like, just taking that bit of time to, whether it's watching Simon Sinek's TED Talk or going to a Tony Robbins event or just reading one of his books or whatever it might be, just things are just, they're so important. And I think in the technical world or even just in the world in general, I'm not convinced that everyone intentionally and consciously thinks about them. But if they did, just the compound effect 6, 12, 18 months down the line is massive. You know, not just for progression and success, but just the way you feel. Like, if your mindset is, you feel mega, don't you?
One other book, one of my favorite books of all times, like pointing to a single book, is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And he talks about 1% better every day, which is not a massive amount. Even if it's 1% better a week, making one small change and working on that small change you talk about compound interest, right? That pays massive dividends, even if it's 1% better a year even. But 1% better a week, 1% better a day has massive compound effects on your life.
Yeah, definitely. There's one called by Jeff Osland called The Slight Edge, which is a bit like that. It's like the compounding effect of just doing it a bit, and then people look around and think you've got a superpower, but really all you've done is just on that compounding. But Robbins, Gary Vee, Simon Sinek, John Maxwell, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, Atomic Habits by James Clear. I think the listeners, mate, I've got no excuse now to not tap into that self-development muscle.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right then, my friend. Look, as we come to the end here, it's been good, John. We've talked about a lot of different things that all interlink with career growth and career progression, mate. It's been really nice to chat. Like I said, I know we had a few false starts, so it's nice to finally get you in the virtual studio and spend a bit of time. If people want to reach out to you, is LinkedIn, is that the best place to hit you up and stuff like that?
Yep, absolutely. I would love to connect with anybody on LinkedIn. Drop me a note. I'd be happy to chat with you. If you got any questions, that's my passion. My passion is people development, exactly what we're talking about here. So if there's anything that I can do to help you be 1% better tomorrow, then I'm happy to help.
Yeah, cool. All right, John, thank you, my friend. Thanks again for your time. It's been really nice chatting and unpacking your journey, and I'll speak to you again soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you, Thomas. It's been a tremendous pleasure, my friend.
Thanks, mate.